Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are strapping in for a really high-octane exploration into one of the most, let's say, misunderstood industries on the planet.
Bitcoin digital mining.
Exactly. And look, we're going to forget the anecdotes, forget the hot takes. Our mission today is to cut through all the hype and dive straight into the verifiable data. And for that, we're pulling exclusively from the comprehensive Cambridge Digital Mining Industry Report.
And it's such a necessary deep dive because you really have to hold two sort of big ideas in your head at the same time.
Okay.
On one hand, Bitcoin is this revolutionary digital asset, but it's also the physical manifestation of a massive global computing and energy infrastructure.
Right. You can't understand the digital token without understanding the mechanics powering it.
You just can't.
And the scale of this engine is it's just mind-boggling. Yeah. We're talking about a network that is secured by this computational infrastructure, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's operating at a rate close to 800 quintillion hashes every single
second. Well, that's a number that's hard to even conceptualize. It's an incomprehensible amount of raw processing power.
And the stakes have never been higher. I mean, last year, institutional finance fully arrived with the approval of U.S. spot Bitcoin ETFs.
It formalized Bitcoin as a legitimate asset class. So our goal today is to provide you, our listener, with a comprehensive, data-driven overview.
We're looking at the operational, the economic, and the energy realities that are truly shaping this multi-billion dollar global industry.
Yeah.
So do that. Let's start with where this all came from. You really have to trace Bitcoin back to its ideological roots.
The cypherpunk movement.
Yeah.
Back in the 1990s.
A movement totally dedicated to using cryptography to protect individual privacy and freedom.
And you can see the foundational technologies they were working on. Things like pre-good privacy or PGP for secure communication.
And Hashcash.
And Hashcash, which was a very early form of proof of work designed to, of all things, combat email spam. These weren't just abstract ideas. They were the actual building blocks for decentralized trust.
And that cryptographic ambition, it really came to a head with the release of Satoshi Nakamoto's white paper.
Published right in the middle of the 2008 global financial crisis.
That was no coincidence.
Not at all. I mean, the very first data written into the network's Genesis block captured the sentiment perfectly.
The Times 03 Jan 2009 Chancellor on brink of second bailout for banks.
It was an explicit critique of centralized fractional reserve finance. It was signaling a shift away from relying on trust in these, you know, intermediaries.
Of course, since those idealistic beginnings, Bitcoin went through some notoriously difficult patches.
Oh, yeah.
You had the early controversies, things like Mt. Gox, the Silk Road dark web marketplace. It definitely tainted its image for years.
For a long time.
Oh,
but
yeah.
The data shows that those early controversies are now, you know, largely a historical footnote.
How so?
Well, we are now seeing established financial titans, we're talking Fidelity, Morgan Stanley, actively offering Bitcoin-related products and services.
And the approval of the U.S. spot Bitcoin ETFs.
Mm.
That was the definitive signal.
It was. The signal that this asset is now deeply integrated into the mainstream financial landscape.
So that forces us to re-examine that classic debate. Is Bitcoin really digital gold? Or is it still just a speculative, high beta risk asset?
Well, let's look at the sheer weight of its value first.
Yeah.
As of late 2024, Bitcoin's total market value is around $2 trillion.
Wow.
That's enough to surpass global behemoths like Alphabet and Tesla.
But, and this is a big but, compared to gold, which sits at an estimated $19.8 trillion.
It still has significant ground to cover to really claim that title, yeah.
But the real question for institutional investors is always how it behaves during stress. Does it decouple from traditional markets when things get rough?
And the report shows that correlation matters deeply here. During major market turmoil, specifically back in 2022, Bitcoin's correlation with risk assets like the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ, it definitely increased.
Which signals sensitivity to liquidity.
Exactly. But in more stable periods, like 2024, it maintains a modest positive correlation. It sort of moves with the market, but not perfectly.
Meaning what, exactly?
Meaning it still retains enough independence to serve as a potential portfolio diversifier, but...
But you can't consistently rely on it as a safe haven.
Not in the same way you rely on gold or short-term treasuries.
Mm-hmm.
Its maturity as an asset class is, well, it's still ongoing.
Okay, that institutional embrace we just discussed is only possible because of the security mechanism at its core.
Mm.
Proof of work. Let's actually look under the hood at the engine room.
Oh, let's do it.
How does mining secure the network, and just how big is the challenge?
It is a massive, competitive, cryptographic puzzle. The goal is to find a valid block hash that meets this constantly changing difficulty target.
Okay.
The required statistical effort to find that hash, it's like a single winning lottery ticket, is about 480 sextillion trials.
That number. It means absolutely nothing to me, frankly. Can you give me that analogy again?
Right, right. It's totally abstract. So think of the Sahara Desert.
Okay.
The computational effort required to find a single valid block hash is 70 times the estimated number of grains of sand in the entire Sahara.
70 times. Wow.
That's the scale of brute force computational labor securing every single transaction.
And yet, with all that intense effort, the block time, the time between new blocks, is still reliably 10 minutes. How is that possible if machines are constantly getting faster?
That's the genius of the difficulty adjustment mechanism. Roughly every 2 weeks, the network automatically reviews how fast the previous 2016 blocks were found.
And it adjusts.
It adjusts. If they were found too quickly, the difficulty goes up. If they were too slow, it goes down. This guarantees the network keeps that average 10-minute block time no matter what.
So once a block is sealed, we talk about immutability. Explain to the listener what prevents someone from retroactively, you know, changing a transaction they regret.
It's all about cryptographic chaining. Each block header contains a link, a hash to the previous block. They are mathematically locked together.
And inside the block?
Inside, all the transactions are summarized by a structure called the Merkle root. So if you were to change even a single character in a transaction from 5 years ago,
the Merkle root would change.
The Merkle root would change, which changes the block header's hash, which then invalidates the link in the next block, and so on, for every subsequent block ever created.
So you'd have to re-mine the entire history since that point.
Which is just economically prohibitive.
That brings up the famous 51% attack, this scenario where a malicious actor controls the majority of the hash rate. The report calls it unfeasible. Do you agree with that?
For Bitcoin specifically, yes. The required power is just enormous. Estimates show that simply meeting the raw energy demand for the necessary infrastructure would require about 6.1 gigawatts of power.
It's just too expensive to acquire, coordinate, and sustain.
Especially when the entire network is watching you do it.
But there's a nuance here we need to address, this centralization paradox around mining pools. The report says four dominant pools.
Foundry, Ant Pool, FireBTC, and F2 Pool.
They collectively control over 75% of the hash rate. That concentration looks deeply risky.
It absolutely looks concentrated, and it does concentrate the power to propose a block. But here is the critical safeguard. Those pools don't actually own that hardware.
Or the electricity.
Or the electricity. The thousands of individual miners who point their machines at the pool, they retain the ultimate power.
So what prevents the pool operators from, say, censoring transactions or acting dishonestly?
The deterrent is instant economic reprisal. If a pool were caught censoring or attempting a double spend, those individual miners could instantly withdraw their hash rate.
And just point their machines at a different pool.
Within minutes, the pool operator would hemorrhage revenue and just disappear. The potential for misbehavior exists, but the economic consequence is a powerful check.
The only caveat the report raises about proxy formations.
Right. They can obscure the true distribution, meaning the perceived decentralization might be slightly inflated.
Okay, let's shift our focus now from the network mechanics to the business reality of the operators. This industry has been defined by the ASIC arms race.
This rapid evolution of hardware designed specifically for this one cryptographic task.
It's a high-stakes, capital-intensive oligopoly, right?
Absolutely. Bitmain, the dominant manufacturer, controls a staggering 82% of the market share for these specialized machines.
Wow.
And while Moore's law, that traditional doubling of computational efficiency, has softened, the competition is still fierce. They're still projecting hardware to hit sub 10 joules per terahash efficiency by 2025.
For the layperson, what does that technical metric sub 10 JTH, what does that actually mean for the business?
It means they are constantly chasing efficiency. You have to get about a 50% jump in raw hardware power efficiency over current models just to stay competitive.
Because your primary cost is the thing that never stops running.
Electricity.
Speaking of costs, the data here is just, it's jaw-dropping. What percentage of total cash operating expenditures goes toward power?
It's the single largest component. It represents 81.1% of total cash operating expenditures.
81 cents on every dollar.
Goes to keeping the lights on and the fans running.
Wow. That explains the almost ruthless focus on energy contracts we see in their quarterly reports. What kind of rates are they actually getting?
The median direct electricity rate reported by the surveyed miners is $45 per megawatt hour.
Okay, and for context?
Well, the average U.S. household rate is often over $150 per megawatt hour. These miners are operating at an industrial scale with intense energy optimization.
So if we use those operational costs and take an illustrative spot price, let's say Bitcoin is trading around, what, 62,763 lazers? What does it cost to actually mint one coin?
So based on the median operational and capital expenditures, the report approximated the total all-in cost to mint one Bitcoin at about $48,333.
Which gives you a margin of just 23.0%.
Exactly. And that highlights just how volatile mining stock profits are. A small drop in the Bitcoin price or a small increase in energy costs can wipe out that margin entirely.
That immense pressure must breed some intense anxiety. What keeps these corporate miners awake at night?
Their primary fears are focused on regulation and stability. 57% cited long-term energy price increases as a major concern.
And the governor.
And 47% worried about unfavorable governmental action. Their response is clear. Risk management centers around business diversification, 64%, and geographical diversification, which was cited by 55%.
Before we move on, I have to mention this one fun nugget. It seems the people operating the machines actually know the market better than the people analyzing the charts.
They certainly proved to be pretty accurate forecasters. The median prediction for Bitcoin's year-end 2024 price from the miners themselves was $80,500.
And it turned out they were actually a little conservative. The actual price realized was $93,390. The environmental impact debate is often the most abstract and, frankly, politically charged.
It is.
But the Cambridge report focuses on direct, self-reported practitioner data about the energy mix. What's the breakdown?
The headline number is that the industry's electricity mix is reported to be predominantly sustainable at 52.4%.
Okay, and what does sustainable include?
Renewables make up 42.6% of that, led by hydropower at 23.4% and wind at 15.4%.
Now, that's 52.4% sustainable number. It faces some heavy skepticism from critics who point to the potential for self-reported bias.
And the report is clear that this is practitioner self-reporting, but it does attempt to mitigate that bias by cross-referencing against publicly available data and mandatory disclosures where possible.
So what's the other side of the coin?
Regardless of the exact percentage, the largest single energy source used remains a fossil fuel, specifically natural gas, which accounts for 38.2% of the overall mix.
But beyond just the mix, the industry is increasingly being leveraged to solve environmental problems rather than create them, specifically through flare mitigation.
This is a fantastic use case. Flare mitigation involves deploying mining operations directly to oil and gas sites.
Why?
To capture stranded natural gas that would otherwise be wastefully flared or vented into the atmosphere. Venting releases methane, which is a greenhouse gas significantly more potent than CO2.
What's the penetration of this right now?
It's still growing. Currently, 6.8% of respondents are using stranded natural gas, which contributes about 3.3% of the industry's total power usage.
And there are companies specializing in this.
Yeah, companies like Crusoe Energy. They use what they call digital flare mitigation technology to transform that waste gas into computational resources. They report up to a 99.9% reduction in methane emissions compared to traditional flaring.
It's literally turning pollution into proof of work.
It is.
And the other major constructive role is grid support through demand response, or DSR. This is where the miner basically partners with the utility company.
Absolutely. Because miners are massive, interruptible loads, they're essentially the perfect virtual power plant.
So during peak demand, say on a scorching summer afternoon,
the utility can trigger a DSR event. The miner instantly reduces or shifts its consumption, stabilizing the grid and preventing brownouts.
And this isn't just a theory. How widespread is this practice?
Extremely. 57.1% of surveyed digital mining firms reported curtailing their load in 2023.
And the total?
An estimated 888 gigawatt hours curtailed at the network level.
The Riot Platforms case study in Texas is a perfect example of the financial incentive here. During that August 2023 heat wave, they voluntarily powered down their consumption within the ERCOT grid.
And they earned nearly $1 million in revenue from ancillary services.
Plus $24 million in power credits. They made money by stabilizing the grid instead of consuming power.
And all of these operational efficiencies become absolutely vital when you look at the long-term threat facing this industry.
The security budget challenge.
Exactly. Because of the halving events every 4 years, the block subsidy is constantly shrinking. The network has to eventually rely entirely on volatile transaction fees to pay miners and incentivize security.
And that transition is still miles away. In 2024, transaction fees only accounted for, what, about 6% of the total mining rewards?
Precisely. And while new token standards like Ordinals and Runes can provide these temporary fee spikes...
Like the launch of Runes.
Yeah. The launch of Runes drove fees to 1,260 BTC on a single day in April 2024. But they lack the consistency you need to secure a $2 trillion network reliably.
This inherent instability is why that risk management strategy we discussed, business diversification, is now moving front and center.
With a massive pivot toward high-performance computing and artificial intelligence.
Miners are brilliantly leveraging their core competency, which is running large-scale data centers with immense power needs.
And the growth potential here is staggering. Global power demand for data centers is projected to increase by 116% between 2024 and 2030. That is a generational opportunity to repurpose their infrastructure.
The numbers attached to this strategic pivot are just... They're truly astonishing. Look at Core Scientific, their agreement to host CoreWeave's AI and HPC workloads.
It's projected to generate $8.7 billion in revenue over 12 years.
That's the magic word right there, predictable.
It's predictable. That revenue stream provides stable, predictable, and crucially uncorrelated cash flow. It protects them from the violent swings of the crypto market.
And we see other firms doing similar things.
Like Bit Digital diversifying into Ethereum staking to secure those stable crypto asset rewards, rather than relying solely on the block reward.
But this isn't a simple swap, is it? AI requires very specific infrastructure. We're talking liquid cooling, high-speed networking, specialized GPUs.
All of which is much more capital-intensive than a standard ASIC deployment. It forces a major trade-off.
A strategic tightrope walk.
It really is. The future trajectory is this constant tension. How much capital do you dedicate to pure specialization, being the lowest cost, most efficient Bitcoin miner, versus how much do you dedicate to diversification into the AI HPC market for stability?
This has been an incredibly illuminating deep dive.
We've really seen the full arc from the cypherpunk origins to the growing institutional acceptance. We've established the tight economic realities of the miner, where 81% of costs are electricity.
And highlighted the sector's constructive roles in environmental mitigation and grid stability through demand response.
And crucially, we've tracked that strategic pivot toward AI infrastructure for long-term resilience.
And that strategic shift leaves us with this final provocative question for you to consider. Given the immense financial incentive and the growth projected in AI infrastructure, especially when you see these massive, stable revenue forecasts like Core Scientific's $8.7 billion deal, will the digital mining industry's successful expansion beyond Bitcoin ultimately redefine or maybe even diminish its commitment to Bitcoin's original vision of a decentralized, apolitical monetary system? That's the challenge for the next decade.